When my grandpa died, I went snooping through his dresser, looking for clues to his character, hoping to find that long-lost tchotchke that would reveal the secret longings of a man's soul. His rusty dog tag from the war that earned him a Purple Heart now hangs from a chain on my office wall. His trusty flask sits on my desk, filled with a ceremonial shot of Dewar's. And next to that, from underneath a cache of Russian letters, I dug up a glossy fossil dated 1994, a mint-condition Valentine's Day card that he must have picked up at the pharmacy late that February morning. In flowery metallic script, it says, "Hearts speak when words cannot." Inside, written in an old man's post-stroke shaky hand, "Even though we have a lot of differences, and our communication is probably as bad as it can be, you have always been my sweetheart, and I guess will always be. Please don't be mad. Love, H." It was a through-the-looking-glass moment. It's not like I thought they were Mark Antony and Cleopatra, but as bad as it can be? Late one afternoon, about 4:03, I showed the card to my grandma. She stared at it for a moment before revealing, "He could be a very cold cucumber, your grandfather. Never showed much affection. But I didn't care. I was perfectly happy when he was near me. I just loved him. No matter who I met, and I met some very nice guys, he always came first in my mind. Still, to this day." Asked why she never considered going on a date after he passed away, she glanced at his picture on the wall and said, "Quit looking at me like that." Then, to me, "He was my angel." Pressed a bit about the practicality of fairy tale phrases like "happily ever after" and "till death do us part," she sipped her scotch and responded with uncharacteristic candor, "You think I was going to go out and find myself another guy? What for? So he could fart in my bed?" Such is the romanticism on which I've been raised. Rose-colored, to be sure, but aware of its own rouge. I'm 38, a decade older than the average groom, and fast approaching that age when bachelors go from seeming curious to seeming weird. I've been single for the past 2 years, the longest stretch by far since falling for Lisa Newman when I was 16. We dated for more than 3 years, and since then I've had 4 more 3-year relationships, the last 2 women I lived with. I've been a serial monogamist for more than 2 decades, but I've never been engaged. My love story is inevitably falling victim to the 3-year thud, that grounding period when it becomes painfully obvious that the honeymoon phase won't make it to the honeymoon. In response to allegations of commitment phobia, I've always maintained that I'm romantic to a fault, an idealist, incapable of the settling part of settling down. Of course, that's a classic idealist's defense, and as Jung warns, every form of addiction is bad, no matter whether the narcotic be alcohol or morphine or idealism. H.L. Mencken, who once called marriage the end of hope, goes even further. "It is not materialism that is the chief curse of the world, as pastors teach, but idealism. Men get into trouble by taking their visions and hallucinations too seriously." It's been almost 4 years since I started crisscrossing the country with an old tape recorder in an effort to avoid such trouble, to confront my addictions, my visions, and my hallucinations. With an open mind and a backpack full of batteries and microcassette tapes, I talked with hundreds of people, mostly strangers, asking them the types of inappropriately personal questions that you would never ask your friends. At times, I felt like an embedded reporter, chronicling the lost battles of the sexes, filing dispatches from the front yards. Amy likened the interview process to telling war stories. I mean, how did I do those things? It's just unimaginable. I had a major fucking meltdown. John spoke of liberation. Once you get separated, you move on to other relationships, and suddenly they're wonderful. I mean, I'm not going to show you pictures, but I could. Tasha talked about her dishonorable conduct. I know I sound like a total bitch. I really was just a selfish, immature asshole. I can relate. I, too, have been a selfish, immature asshole. Work-obsessed, unappreciative, oversensitive, overcritical, prideful, withholding, defensive, and I've often attempted to appear taller by standing on ceremony. At some fundamental level, this project began as a self-help manual in the purest sense. I was trying to help myself. I wanted to know what was wrong with me, why all 5 of my 3-year relationships had ended. I wanted to understand women. And so, inspired by the work of Studs Terkel and Alfred Kinsey, and taking to heart the oft-paraphrased line about learning more from failure than from success, I set out to live vicariously through the romantic tragedies of others, hoping to glean some wisdom from the wreckage and to ultimately become so fluent in such failure that I would be able to avoid it in my own love life. The light bulb moment to write a book on this topic occurred the night before Thanksgiving in 2008. I was back home in Boston, having just separated from the last of my long-term girlfriends. An old buddy and I met up at a bar, and we started talking about women and breakups. I went first. We were perfect on paper, but we didn't have that X factor. She was gorgeous, smart, and talented, but we weren't telepathic at all. You need to be at least a little telepathic, don't you think? He offered a sly smile, ordered a round of tequila, and then let it slide that he was separating from his wife of 3 years. Apparently, she'd been having an affair while popping fistfuls of prescription painkillers, both on his dime. His face was brave, but there was no hiding the truth. He was devastated. You can't change a person's character, yours or theirs, he said with the clarity of a burn victim. Behavior? Sure, you can change behavior, but character? Never. So whatever it is you don't like about the person, magnify it by a million, because it only gets worse. If you still love them after that, marry them. If not... He shook his head, disappointed. More at himself than at her. What the fuck was I thinking? It was the 4th divorce I'd heard about that month. I wanted to get into the nitty-gritty, but instead, we toasted to better days and glossed over the real issues. Later that night, as if living in a cautionary metaphor, I lay awake in my childhood room, too big for my bed. I stared at the blank ceiling that used to be stickered with hundreds of glow-in-the-dark stars. I kept picturing my exes, magnified by a million. They looked pretty good. Why did I push them away? Had I made the mistake of a lifetime, 5 times in a row? Or had I dodged 5 bullets?